Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, the good news, first of all, is that we no longer ever have to listen to a Barack Obama State of the Union address. He claimed it would be the shortest. I'm not sure it was, but thankfully it's over now. And we'll get to some of his more questionable content in the last two martinis. The Republican response was given by Nikki Haley, governor of South Carolina, and she is the good martini today. And there were a couple of points that I think resonated both in terms of honesty and in vision. First of all, here's the honesty, where she talked about how it's not just Democrats who have contributed to the disaster in Washington.
We need to be honest with each other and with ourselves. While Democrats in Washington bear much responsibility for the problems facing America today, they do not bear it alone. There is more than enough blame to go around. We as Republicans need to own that truth. We need to recognize our contributions to the erosion of the public trust in America's leadership. We need to accept that we've played a role in how and why our government is broken. And then we need to fix it.
So at least one of the featured speakers last night, Jim, admitted that their party wasn't perfect. And then she talked about what a difference it would be if there was a Republican in the White House.
If we held the White House, taxes would be lower for working families. And we'd put the brakes on runaway spending and debt. We would encourage American innovation and success instead of demonizing them. So our economy would truly soar and good jobs would be available across our country. We would end a disastrous health care program and replace it with reforms that lowered costs and actually let you keep your doctor. We would recognize the importance of the separation of powers and honor the Constitution in its entirety. And yes, that includes the Second and Tenth Amendments. We would make international agreements that were celebrated in Israel and protested in Iran, not the other way around.
So some very strong content at different parts there, Jim. Probably one of the better Republican responses in recent years. The range of reaction is impressive. Some wondering why Nikki Haley's not running for president. Others saying when she talked about angry voices that that was a shot at some of the presidential candidates. But overall, a lot of the content in there painted a pretty sharp contrast with not only Obama, but where the Democrats want to take the country.
It was, Greg. I think we can safely say this was probably, if not the best, then among the best responses to the State of the Union. A couple of podcasts ago, you and I had talked about how this is a tough job, that there's no audience. It inevitably seems to wither in comparison to the grandeur and the pomposity and everything that goes with the president. A couple things jump out at me. One, a lot of people are saying this puts Nikki Haley to the top of the list for running mates. That strikes me as a little premature and a little exaggerated. I just put over in the corner a list. Nikki Haley has a pretty good record as governor, but there have been some missteps here and there that if she is on the ticket, are going to be issues, and she's got to be prepared for that. So it doesn't mean take her off. It just means know what you're getting there, and let's not overstate the ability to give a good speech. Although people have pointed out to me subsequently, Greg, that giving good speech is now all we expect of a president these days. The other thing which is worth noting there, I'm starting to think about politics, is that the two strongest parts of the speech were qualities that were more or less unique to Nikki Haley. When she talks about being the child of immigrants and growing up Indian American in South Carolina, that's unique to her. It's something that is unique to her, and at a time when immigration is arguably the biggest issue in the Republicans' minds, maybe an issue that is tearing the country apart. When you speak from personal experience, it comes across as authentic, and you speak with a certain amount of authority on that. I think that helped her, that strengthened her a great deal. And the second part was discussing the state's response to that awful shooting by that nutjob white supremacist who shot up the black church. She didn't make it so explicit, like, look how my state responded compared to, say, Baltimore. But she pointed out the power of prayer, what you had said was the most inspiring moment of the past year. These are things that only the governor of South Carolina, only Nikki Haley can say and do. Now, there are some folks who didn't like the fact that they took down the Confederate flag, but I kind of felt like increasingly your personal history is what gives a political figure their strengths and their credibility. If Trump were not a successful businessman and a guy who had built giant towers all across the country, people wouldn't listen to him. And so kind of what she did was she leveraged what she had unique about herself very well in that speech. A lot of people asking who the speechwriter was, because it was very well done. And we'll see what this means for Nikki Haley's future.
Yeah, certainly. And you mentioned that the response, the person giving the response, doesn't have an audience. They tried that a few years ago when Bob McDonnell was governor of Virginia. But I think the reason nobody wants to do it again is because someone will say, hey, you're the first person to do that since Bob McDonnell. That's a sentence no one wants to be part of.
That just all of a sudden, and this, you know, then the U.S. attorney just says, I'm just going to investigate him on out of principle. All right. That's, you know, if you're doing that, it's got to be good. The other one was Christy Whitman.
Yes.
Yeah, you could be the next Christy Whitman. Hope you like the EPA.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And the president talked for, as we said, longer than he promised to. And there's a lot of different things we had to choose from here, Jim, but it's probably the one that's most pressing in the minds of Americans these days. And this is his grasp of the threat posed by ISIS and just his ability to ignore basic facts when determining what the threat is and what ISIS is and is not.
They pose an enormous danger to civilians. They have to be stopped. But they do not threaten our national existence. That is the story ISIL wants to tell. That's the kind of propaganda they use to recruit. We don't need to build them up to show that we're serious. And we sure don't need to push away vital allies in this fight by echoing the lie that ISIL is somehow representative of one of the world's largest religions.
Hope you didn't have a lit match around all those straw men there, Jim. But, you know, killing them would show that we're serious.
Greg, as you're listening to that, did that sound like that was supposed to be a bunch of applause lines?
Yes.
That just didn't get any applause? They're not an existential threat. Yay. 9/11 wasn't an existential threat, but it was still really bad, right? I mean, like Obama keeps insisting, look, they can't destroy America. That's really setting the bar really high. They're a threat to civilians. Yes, San Bernardino knows all about this. Paris knows all about this, right? Even if they don't destroy America, there's still a lot of bad things that happen. That is the job of America. That is the job of the government to stop and prevent and interdict whenever possible. And so he goes, well, we're still the strongest country in the world. Look, in just 24 hours before the president gives that speech, we let 10 terrorists out of Gitmo. 10 sailors are captured by Iran. Now, thankfully, they were released this morning. And 10 people were killed in Istanbul by an ISIS suicide bomber who, oh, by the way, came through as a refugee. I pointed this out last night and somebody said, oh, you've heard of 999. This is Obama's 10-10-10 plan. But anyway, I don't think I've ever seen a worse news cycle for a White House 24 hours before the State of the Union. And he goes out, he gives the exact same speech, doesn't even feel the need to mention the situation going on in Iran. And he finds the time for almost every other topic under the sun. It came across as denial. It was just, you know, early, you know, the Philadelphia shooting, right? I mean, you know, some guy who said he was inspired by ISIS did that. The ISIS did a car bomb in Baghdad. I mean, like, ISIS is on the march, and Obama just didn't want to talk about that last night. He wanted to tell America, no, we're doing fine. We knew last night was going to be bad, and it was just about as bad as we expected it was going to be, wasn't it, Greg?
It was definitely bad. I was expecting to just be nauseated and really annoyed, but I found it just kind of tedious and boring at various times. And I think even in the chamber, you mentioned There were supposed to be all those applause lines, and even Democrats were kind of just, all right, let's get on with this thing.
This presidency ended a little while ago. And no one bothered to tell the president. You could tell none of them felt particularly fired up or inspired by what he was saying. There was still the kind of, you know, it was, you know, Mr. Negative felt the need to say to Americans, hey, you're being partisan. You know, there were a lot of points in this that were really, really irksome and seemed to drag on. And you can tell nobody wants to be there anymore other than the president. You'd like to think the next president might really rethink how to make the State of the Union more worthwhile for everyone involved. And for the first thing is, don't promise it's going to be shorter and then say, give you, I think, the second or third longest speech he'd ever, you know, State of the Union address he'd ever given. Although I guess I shouldn't be surprised about a Obama expiration date. Now, should I agree?
Yeah, just think if people had clapped, it might have challenged the record. Who knows? But all right, on to the crazy martini. And it still deals with national security because crazily, the American people aren't quite sure this president is up to the task of dealing with ISIS and dealing with the threat posed to American citizens here at home and our allies abroad. And the president's out there saying, trust me, America, we're going to get this done. And here's the examples he used to prove it.
ISIL will learn the same lessons as terrorists before them. If you doubt America's commitment or mine to see that justice is done, just ask Osama bin Laden. Ask the leader of al-Qaeda in Yemen, who was taken out last year, or the perpetrator of the Benghazi attacks, who sits in a prison cell. When you come after Americans, we go after you. And it may take time, but we have long memories, and our reach has no limits.
Perpetrator of Benghazi, singular, Jim. One person did all that, and we got him all figured out.
The one guy, that guy. We're not even going to say his name because it's long, it's got a lot of vowels in it, but he's the guy. We got that guy out of like several dozen perpetrators. Great. And here's the thing. I think in Obama's mind, check the box. It's done. It's taken care of. And it's really depressing, but we've come to expect this. That every, you know, like I'm sure there, as of this morning, there are a lot of people who are touting the relatively quick release of the 10 sailors from Iran as a victory for the administration. Some people saying it was the president's personal diplomacy that worked all this. Look, if you're watching the videos, they're getting paraded in front of cameras, hands on their head. The woman soldiers forced to wear a hijab. They're thanking Iran. And this is, you know, okay, he's talking about how no one dares mess with us while our soldiers are sitting in Iranian detention, or our sailors. My headline of the morning jolt today, I feel like, you know, summarized it very well, Greg. The state of denial is strong.
Can't add to that. That is exactly right. And fortunately, it's the last one. Hopefully, the next time we hear a joint address to the Congress from the president, we'll be in much better mood. Jim, we survived it, though. Debate tomorrow. Get ready.
Can we have, like, only one big event per week per night? Space it out a little.
Right. Yeah, we need better pacing. Anyway, have a good day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.